So this is actually the first time we're recording with three people that have been in the same place at the same time. Well, the same movie theater at the same time.
Yes.
At least for this show. So that's pretty cool. All right, well, let's get right down to it. We have two people today, and one of them is a special person to me.
It's not me.
Two. There are two special people, but no offense, one is a little more special than the other. So the first guest is my wife, Andrea. Hello, Andrea.
Hello, Aaron.
And this is her podcast debut.
It is.
I don't know if you're excited or reluctant.
Nervous.
Yeah, nervous. It's fine. I was too my first time. I still am, actually.
Okay.
But not this time. Andrea, for people that listen to my podcast, you've probably heard me reference her because basically everything I do is informed by her opinion, and maybe that's an overstatement, but she's a linguist, she's a professor, an English professor, she's a Jeopardy champion, she's really into post-colonial topics, she's into Russian Cold War, all sorts of documentaries, so she's interesting, I think a lot more interesting than I am, so I'm glad to have her. Thanks for coming on, honey.
Oh, thank you, Aaron.
And the other guest is somebody that's pretty special.
It's all relative.
Exactly. Martin Kessler. And in fact, Martin, it's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been quite a while. Thank you for having me back. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I think the last time I've actually really talked to you was when we hung together in Toronto. I don't right. think... Have we been on a podcast since then?
Maybe not. Yeah, it might have been that long.
And we've done a bunch in the past.
There's been a whole winter in between.
I know. But that was fun. That was enough.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was enough for a number of podcasts. Yeah, we hung out with Martin in Toronto and went to a movie with him at TIFF.
Mm-hmm. Lightbox.
Lightbox, yeah. That was pretty awesome. We saw a Frank Zappa movie, which not my first choice, but it was good.
Mm-hmm. It was fun.
How you been doing, Martin?
Pretty good. Keeping busy. Podcasting wise, work wise, movie making wise. Yeah.
And speaking of which, he's on FlixWise. So getting a little apartment references there. And have you guys been doing a lot lately on FlixWise, Martin?
Yeah, there's been a lot out recently and a lot more on the way soon. I think for people who are into Criterion, we had an episode on Visconti's The Leopard not too long ago, and we had Dave Eves on as a guest.
Cool.
That's a pretty good one. And I guess the most recent episode, we talked about A Shot in the Dark with Peter Sellers.
Nice.
Joshua Wilson was a guest on that one. And I think maybe by the time people hear this or a day or two from now, there should be a Barry Lyndon episode up, but not on that one.
Nice. Okay. I look forward to hearing that. I've actually changed jobs, so I get to listen to fewer podcasts, so I have actually not heard any of those or really any of the last few FlixWise, so I need to get on that. But, well, let's get right to it. We actually have a lot of stuff to cover, and so this is Criterion Now episode, what are we at now, 7? Yeah, 7. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're flying by here, and so I'll start out with the really big topic of this week, and actually we almost brought this up a couple episodes ago, which was the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we kind of brought it up last week, and I think we teased that La La Land would win, and so we kind of wondered, is that appropriate for this show? You know, it's Oscars and Criterion, there's really not a whole lot of overlap. There's only a handful of Best Picture winners. There's The Last Emperor, mm-hmm. and I think there was one more. I don't recall off the top of my head. If you know, Martin, jump in.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many are in the Criterion collection. I mean, it's probably hard to pick out years where the Best Picture winner was actually the best film that year.
Right.
That might be kind of rare.
Well, there have been probably a lot of Best Foreign Film winners in the collection, and mm-hmm. and there are a lot of Palme d'Or winners, which has nothing to do with the Oscars, but... But this year, of course, was interesting in a lot of respects. One thing that's cool is the Best Picture winner is a Criterion fan and a film mm-hmm. school teacher, and he actually did a closet video.
Yes, it's great.
Yeah, so, mm-hmm. and a really fun closet video where he had, like, guilt, remorse for picking too much. I would not feel that way.
Yeah, I know you wouldn't.
did you see that video, Martin?
I did. I liked his enthusiasm.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, this year Moonlight won, and I think that's kind of a Criterion-ish kind of title. Obviously, it's not going to come out anytime soon. I think it's a Lionsgate too, which doesn't help. But I could see that type of movie, you know, down the road being up Criterion's alley, or maybe his debut film. What do you think, Martin?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think what sort of surprised me is that it's not the sort of film that I think of typically winning a Best Picture. But I'm glad. I think, like, out of the batch of films that were the big award season films that I had seen, it was probably my favorite. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we liked Arrival.
We did, and as a linguist.
Yeah, and that's when I said Andrea informs my film watching, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. But I was not disappointed.
Me either. And
La La Land was fine, too, mm-hmm. but I just think that Moonlight is a little more cinematic. Well, no, I shouldn't say that.
it was very surreal, though, because I just caught the announcement. I just tuned in to see, oh, who's going to win Best Picture? Oh, of course, it's La La Land.
Then I
went to bed, and it felt like the beginning of a Twilight Zone episode the next day, waking up, and, oh, Moonlight won. Where's the ironic twist? What's coming next?
It was wild watching it live.
Yeah, yeah, it was, like, one of the most dramatic Oscars I think I've ever seen.
Me too. Me too.
But the great thing is the two pictures that were, I guess, up there, mm-hmm. they're both made by young guys, relatively young guys, who really love film and really paid tribute to filmmakers of old with their films. I'd say maybe a little more so with La La Land, mm-hmm. just because there's the musical, the Demi and mm-hmm. the MGM right. musicals. But so, were you happy with the results, Martin?
Sure. I mean, I'm happy for the filmmakers, and mm-hmm. I mean, as far as it goes, the mix-up, it's not the worst thing in the world to see both films get a little bit of attention and, you know, have both people go up on stage. That wasn't so bad, I thought.
I know, yeah. Maybe it took a little way away from Moonlight, but...
Sure.
But I like the decency, you know, between the two of them. And
yeah.
Jordan Horowitz.
Producer who said this isn't a joke. That's the person that when I produced one of my films, because you could see him straighten up the situation very quickly. So
yeah,
like somebody could get things done.
Yeah, Jordan Horowitz. And actually, I found he's on Letterboxd and really an interesting guy. So I actually followed him on Letterboxd today.
Oh, cool.
I think that was really a great moment for him. Mm-hmm. So, well, besides those big films, often we look at Best Documentary and Best Foreign Film. And I don't know that there's any that really could come to Criterion. The Salesman won foreign film. Of course, that's already picked up by Cohen Media. And I think Tony Erdman, I don't know who has the rights to that.
I have no idea.
And then documentaries, OJ, of course.
OJ. And I'm going to talk about OJ later.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, good. And what's the James Baldwin one?
I Am Not Your Negro.
Yeah, so I don't know who's distributing that one, mm-hmm. but that seems like it could be up Criterion's alley. But anyway, that's... It's not really Criterion-ish, so maybe we should move on. Any final thoughts on the Oscars, Martin?
No, I think that's about it.
I just want to say Barry Jenkins in his Criterion video, I love that he picked out Laen, which was my Criterion gateway and something that I've shown my students, and mm-hmm. so that I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it's one of the best movies about culture, I think, and about culture clash.
And post-colonialism.
Yeah. And in modernity.
Modernity, yeah.
So, in fact, you turned me onto that film, even though it's all, mm-hmm. already Criterion, so mm-hmm. that's a good one. Yeah, Andrea shows some of my films, I guess that's my film, to her class, which I think is awesome. And it's funny to hear her talk about how they react. And usually
they loved Laen.
Yeah, usually. And that's surprising.
Foreign film, black and white film, but
yeah.
they really
we have to read this movie? Where? All right, well, let's move on. There was a flash sale this week, so those are always fun. I think we kind of had predicted that. So, Martin, I know HMV's out of business.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer, but did you get anything from the flash sale? Is that too cost prohibitive for you guys?
I think earlier in the month I had already sort of picked up some of the Criterions I had I had been eyeballing. So by the time the flash sale came, I sort of felt like, it's maybe not worth it exactly to get films that I wasn't as enthusiastic about as the ones I had already purchased. So I held off this time, maybe next time.
Okay, cool. Is it still pretty, is it cost prohibitive to do that because of the currency or the shipping?
I think I worked out, like by the time you factor in shipping and the exchange rate and everything, I don't know if you have to pay duties. It was like 10% discount instead of 50% discount, which isn't the worst. But, you know, it's like, do I really want to? Not all the time.
Is that 10% off the list price or 10% off the usual, like the Amazon price?
Off the Amazon price.
Oh, well, that's not too bad.
Yeah. No, not too bad.
Yeah, this flash sale was different because there was a pre-sale email teaser, and actually, and we were trying to figure out how people got this, because some of my friends did get it, some did not, and I got one, and I wasn't sure how. I had some emails from Criterion in the past, but it turns out, I think the reason is because I'd spent enough money in the Criterion shop, which... As Andrea, who looks at my credit bills, knows quite a bit.
They don't want to sleep through the sale. No.
and I noticed some other friends that got the email just comparing notes. It seems like they also order from the Criterion shop a lot. So I think that's probably it. They probably had a benchmark for their most common customers. I think it was even worded, you know, to our biggest customers. Here you go. Advance notice of a flash sale. But I didn't need much. I actually just bought four. I know. I bought four DVDs just to get something, and I forget what they were, but just old DVDs I didn't have. So a lot of other people did get a lot of cool stuff. Andrea, did you get anything?
I did not, no. Oh,
did you want anything?
No.
Okay, because we already have it.
I know.
Okay, well, if people want to share what they got, although... If you go to these Criterion circles and social media circles, everybody posts these fun little pictures. I always enjoy that. Even Reddit, people post their pictures of their hauls, so to speak. So, all right, well, let's move along again. We had a newsletter clue. Martin, are you very good at solving these?
This time, I think maybe I had a pretty good guess, and I've heard other people saying the same thing, so I might luck out this time.
Now, did you guess Meantime?
I did.
Okay.
I mean, that's maybe a little bit of wishful thinking, but I'm a big Mike Leigh fan, and I think it would make sense. Cause I think... I forget if it was already sort of announced that Criterion had the rights to it, but... I don't know, any more Mike Leigh films in the collection is great news for me, and it has great early performances by Tim Roth and Gary Oldman, so I think that would be a nice addition if that turns out to be the case.
Well, yeah, it has been rumored, and it's been on Filmstruck, so you don't have access to Filmstruck up in Canada, sorry.
No, no.
But I think it's almost a given. I don't know if you saw it, Andrea, but
I have not. No.
It was a clock that was angry, so hence Meantime. So there were some other good guesses. Bad Timing, which is Nicholas Rogue. After Hours, which was rumored, or I think that was based on a misreading of a newsletter clue a couple years ago. And then it was kind of a stretch, but Rin Tin Tin. some people guessed that. That was because it was...
Why?
Well, the picture is an alarm clock, and it's at the 10. It's at 10:10. So they thought ring 10:10.
I think that's a stretch, but
yeah. But they do that sort of wordplay.
Well,
so that timing's already in the collection, right? It would have they ever teased
it's DVD
an
right?
upgrade?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember. They have okay.
Yeah, they have. I forget which one. But yeah, they have. I'll have to research that and get back to you. But yeah. In fact, I'm pretty sure we talked about that on another episode.
Okay.
But they have. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, if it's Mike Leigh, I haven't seen Meantime, but I love Mike Leigh. I love early Mike Leigh. Life is Sweet. Naked. And I have, Andrea, I know you're a fan as well.
Yes. Secrets and Lies.
Secrets and Lies.
Yeah,
I think that's the big one that should really come to Criterion.
It should.
Yeah, I don't know who owns, was that a New Yorker?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I know you don't look at this stuff like I do. But I know you liked Life is Sweet, right?
Oh, Life is Sweet was great, too. Yeah, yeah.
The Sparrow. Yeah, he's great. And there was that great emotional scene towards the end. What's the name of that actress? We'll have to do an episode on that movie. Yes. I love that movie. Actually, I remember listening to the commentary, and he said that was his least favorite movie.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Yes. I was like, man, really? And he said that at the very end, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you could have let off with that. So, are you excited about Mean Time? Well, I guess you are.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. If that turns out to be it, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it is. Andrea, are you going to watch Mean Time?
I would watch it, yes.
Okay. You haven't seen it, right?
I have not seen it.
Yeah. There's another early Mike Lee, and our audio configuration, we actually can't go on the internet, which is really a weird thing. And that's just because we have both of us at the microphone here. And if we got on the internet, we would make lots of sounds. but there's another Mike Lee that I think is also going to come to the collection that's from around the same time, but I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, is it Nuts in May, maybe? Or
No.
One of the early ones.
So if you name it all, and it'll be like a light bulb, but So anyway, well, let's move on to this week's release. I should also say that we skipped Mildred Pierce on the last show, and we're going to skip Mildred Pierce again. We're going to cover it on the next show, because this week we got the Before trilogy, and well, since I have my wife here, we have a story, and you probably heard it before, but not from her lips, so So anyway, the Before trilogy came out this week. We received it. It looks great.
It does.
Nice digipack. Did you look at the artwork?
Not really, no.
What's right there on the shelf?
Okay.
And yours, Martin, is not arrived? Or
It's still in the mail, but I picked it up. Amazon, the pre-order price for a little while was very inexpensive, so that time it was worth it to order from the States.
Yeah, there was a pricing glitch. So, in fact, this time with the flash sale, I like to watch to see what sells out. And a few titles sold out, but Before Sun, the trilogy was not one of them.
Really?
Yeah, and I think that's because the Criterion community is pretty vast, and everybody spread word of that Amazon. That's how we got it.
Yep.
So, yay, saving money. Martin, thoughts on the Before trilogy?
I think they're fantastic. It's been a little while since I've watched all three. I've sort of seen one here, one there. Of course, the latest one when it came out. And I don't think I've actually ever watched all three of them in a row. So I'll be looking forward to that. I've seen some of the pictures of the artwork. It looked really nice, too. I like the style.
Yeah. A lot of people were hating on the artwork, which is pretty common, Andrea. But yeah, when it arrived, it did look very nice. Well, I saw pretty much all three about the time they came out. And we saw Before Sunset together, right. And that was kind of like our movie.
Yep.
So we rewatched Before Sunrise the other day, and we kind of had it on in the background, and we watched the special features. And it was interesting, having not seen it for at least 15 years, maybe more, how it does speak to the other films, or I should say they reverse engineered those films to speak to it. But yeah, of course you miss that because there's so much time apart. Did you like revisiting it? Or
I did. I first saw it when it came out on video, and I had been, as many Gen Xers, I lived in Europe, studied abroad, and had a Eurail pass. Got on a train, and I didn't meet anyone like, you know, Ethan Hawke met Julie Delpy.
Or like Aaron West.
Yeah.
Good thing.
But the whole, you know, it just brought me back to that time. It was right before, you know, widespread internet and no cell phones and no, you know, just you're reliant on, you know, physical media. It was great to revisit it.
Yeah, well, and I think if there had been cell phones and more internet, the ending would have been a little different.
Yes, it would have.
And actually, it makes me think, I'm watching it with that lens for Before
Friend
Sunset.
Friend me on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. What's your Twitter? So, do you want to tell the Before Sunset story?
Oh, you go ahead.
Well, I told it before in the podcast.
Okay.
Why don't you tell it?
Well, we got married.
Yeah.
Since
2004, right?
2006.
What am I talking about? We just celebrated 10 years.
That's okay. Well, because Before Sunset was our movie, mm-hmm. when we went to Paris on our honeymoon, we decided to retrace the steps of Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our last day in Paris.
Right.
I was sick.
Yep.
So we got to the part right before the boats and kind of called it a day.
Yeah, that was pretty much the most... I think basically we didn't have the apartment. We actually could have gone. We knew where it was, mm-hmm, where her apartment mm-hmm, was. Mm-hmm. But also, do you just want to crash some random apartment?
I know.
So we saw the major locations. Mm-hmm. And how did we do that? I know I'm leading you.
Oh, it was somebody on a Yahoo group had a sort of, these are the places and here is the map. And I had sort of mapped and you helped, mm-hmm. you know, to look. And it's much more complicated than, you know, just walking around, because you had to get on a subway and then you had to...
Yeah, it was not that hour and a half of real time. That was movie magic, because
that was
like a full day for us.
Yes, yes.
The cool thing is, a lot of those locations were kind of off the beaten path in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we got to see some neat little, like that little park on that, I don't know, it's almost like the High Line in New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's really like Promenade something, mm-hmm. I forget. But
Promenade Plantée. Right?
That was it, Plantée. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of fun. So yeah, that movie is special to us, but mm-hmm. I don't think we've seen it since around...
I haven't.
Yeah, since then. So it'll be fun to rewatch it. Oh, I should also, a little housekeeping. We were trying to figure out how to do box sets on this show, because we generally talk about releases as they come out.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way we can consume a box set in a week.
Right.
So I think what we're going to do is split them up. So next week we'll talk about Before Sunset, and that'll be with different guests. Sorry, Andrea and Martin.
It's okay.
And we'll finally get to Mildred Pierce as well. Hopefully
someday.
And then probably finish up with Midnight either the week after that or the week after that, so that makes it a little easier. And you know, maybe we'll do big episodes on Close Up or Criterion Cast down the road, but at least we give our short impressions. So yeah, probably be a little while until you get yours, Martin.
It might be this week, maybe even Monday. It just missed it by a hair.
Okay, so well, I'll be curious your thoughts when you revisit it. I think they'll probably be kind of like ours. I will say, the at least on Before Sunrise, the features were neat.
Oh, yeah. I like the interview with Delpy and Hawke and later.
It was almost an hour, and mm-hmm. we just put it on, and Andrea said, oh, I'm not going to watch this. I'm going to go upstairs. But then you kept watching it.
And 43 minutes later, and
it was
still
that's what it was. And then there was a little critical conversation, which didn't flow as fast, but it was still pretty interesting. I don't think you saw that.
I did not see that one.
It was not, I mean, I'm not going to say it's not worth it. It was definitely worth it, but I think that the best supplement was the filmmakers and, mm-hmm. and talking about that process. So, all right, well, next week, 45 Years is coming out. I've already seen it, but I saw it on, you know, Netflix or pay-per-view or video on demand or something. I forget what it was. And I liked it. Didn't love it, but I think that might be a film you have to see twice. And I don't think you watched it with
me. I did not, and I love Tom Courtney. He's one of my favorites.
So do you want to watch this Criterion?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
It's
not often that we get to watch Criterions together. She's not a Bergman kind of person. Or,
no.
In fact, wait till I get to the next topic.
I saw it.
So Martin, are you a 45 Years fan?
I had sort of a similar reaction. I probably do owe it a second viewing, but... you know, Charlotte Rampling, who was in Night Porter, and of course, Andrew Haig, who directed Weekend. It makes sense why it's coming from Criterion. I'll probably watch it again if I have a chance.
Yeah, it's a recent release, so that's mm-hmm. those are nice to see, but not always common. She was also in Swimming Pool as well. Mm-hmm. I remember she was very good in that. Are we going to talk about that next week too? Wow. Probably not. We're probably shelving that one for the week or month after. It's actually a lighter month in April, because we have it's going to be a normal month in March and then lighter in April. So we'll catch up. So also, and I guess Andrea will probably tune out for this part. we'll get to a couple little news items here. So yeah, this is very interesting to me, and I have a feeling it is to you as well, Martin. But Janis is touring Chungking Express. And it's playing at the Metrograph in New York City, and it was, Janis announced it. So I believe Janis is touring it.
Yeah.
This movie is famously out of print because of Studio Canal, but Wong Kar-wai was in the Criterion closet or kitchen, right?
Kitchen, yeah.
Yeah. So something's going on. Some people speculated a box set maybe because they probably wouldn't just reissue a movie that's out of print. That's what they did with the Tati films. They didn't reissue Playtime. They just put it in a box. So, Martin,
yes.
Sure you have to like this movie, right?
Of course, and this is one I kind of lucked out in getting the film before it went out of print. So if it does come back as a box set, I'd better unload the copy I have while I still can, like those Tati films. But I think that'd be fantastic if it was available again. If it's touring, I might actually try and see it in the theater because I've only ever seen it on a small screen. So I think that would be fantastic.
Cool. Yeah, it'd be great to see it at Lightbox.
Yeah.
I don't know if Janis films play there much.
I think sometimes. I mean, I saw last summer Stalker, but I don't think that was the restoration. I think that was just like a 35 millimeter print that they had because it was a little worn down. But that's another one I wouldn't mind seeing again.
Andrea, Chungking Express? No.
Not a fan of Wong Kar-wai, sorry.
Andrea's not a fan of slow cinema. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Well, you like like slow drama, like say Taking Shelter or Take Shelter. That's kind of a slow burn drama.
Yeah, Jeff Nichols.
And other filmmakers like that. Even Arrival is kind of, or Manchester by the Sea is kind of slow narrative.
In the Mood for Love, I guess, is supposedly one of the best movies ever, people say. I did not like it at all, and I haven't liked any of his other movies, so sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. Yeah.
We won't judge you, but all our listeners will.
Okay, that's fine.
you are a Criterion wife, so you...
Okay, right.
You're tolerant of most, or a lot. Well, that brings us to Stalker. So that's another one that's touring, and it's going to play at Lincoln Center. So Stalker also is on Filmstruck, and it I guess the DVD is out of print. There was a Artificial Eye restoration last year that got some pretty mixed reviews. Actually, I'd say pretty poor reviews. But apparently the print for Stalker is a lot better. Now, Andrea, as a Russian aficionado, I think you'd find some of it interesting because it was basically shot, it wasn't in Chernobyl, but it was somewhere where there was some nuclear waste.
Right, yeah. I know the story.
Yeah, so, and I think that a lot of people speculate that filming that movie, it took forever, I think over a year, and a lot of people think that the exposure to that radiation killed Tarkovsky.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
But it also resulted in some beautiful images.
Right.
So I think it's slow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very slow and philosophical.
Right.
I love it, but I'm sure you love it, Martin. It seems right up your alley.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's definitely my kind of film. I think the new restoration, it's probably the same one that's on the Moss Film YouTube channel. They have one of the best YouTube channels where they have all sorts of classic Soviet films.
Oh, wow.
Some of them even with the English subtitles.
Cool.
But, you know, that's a great rabbit hole to go down if anyone ever gets the chance. Some of the restorations actually look great, you know, and it's just a YouTube channel, so you can see it for free.
Oh, nice.
Hmm, cool.
Yeah, Moss Film, there was something that came out a couple months ago saying that they had licensed films to Criterion, so that's probably what this is, and maybe more Tarkovsky. And I think the War and Peace I think it's just long.
Yeah.
Is that Bondarchuk? I think is the name of the director.
It's the one with the same actress from Letter Never Sent and The Cranes Are Flying, right?
Oh,
that version?
She's great.
Yeah, Tatiana, I forget the last name,
too.
But she's fantastic. There's so many great Soviet films that like really haven't been seen over here. I would love it if Criterion could get some more out.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I still don't know that War and Peace would be up your alley. Well,
oh, of course it would.
Well, I think it might be slow, though.
Ah.
Well, but there's a story. We know that.
I know the War and Peace story.
There
so
you go. All right. Well, Stalker opens May 5th in Lincoln Center. So, and also it was on the newsletter clue, mm-hmm. The New Year's clue. So I'm pretty sure it's coming. It might just be on the normal touring schedule. So again, maybe late summer, hopefully, but probably this year. So, Martin, any other thoughts?
See it. Anybody who hasn't seen it, see it,
yeah.
Please.
do you think that's a good theatrical experience? Because it is slow.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a... Because in the theater, you're sort of trapped. You can't pull out your cell phone. You can't... I mean, I suppose you could, munch popcorn all the way through Stalker, but you might get some side eye. So I think that's actually a good way to experience it. Plus, you come out and you're in kind of a daze and you look around at the other people you saw it with and you're like, well, we just saw something, we experienced something. So I would recommend people see it in the theater.
Yeah, I think you're right. And with slow cinema, when you watch it at home, and I'm guilty of this, you know, with gadgets and phones and iPads, sometimes you take too many bathroom breaks and you break up the film because you're not trapped in that setting.
Right.
So I think you're right. I think there is something to be said for seeing it in the theaters.
I mean, I love a lot of slower films. Not all of them, but definitely some of them. But I'm guilty of breaking some of them up. You know, I'm not going to watch Satan Tango in one viewing.
Right. And we're not going to watch War and Peace in one viewing. I'm just saying that right now.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right, well, should we move to the next one?
Sure.
Okay, are you guys Martin Scorsese fans?
Somewhat.
Okay, Martin?
Yeah, I think somebody on the Criterion Gyre forum mentioned that they like Martin Scorsese more as a film enthusiast than as a filmmaker. I'm sort of starting to feel like I'm maybe a little bit more in that camp. Although he's made films I really, really love, I just think... I appreciate his enthusiasm for film and talking about films maybe even more than most of his movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here. He's more of a... I'm not going to slag his films. I think a lot of his films are wonderful, especially his early ones, and really up through his 90s work. And then since then, it's been a little scattershot, but I haven't seen Silence yet, so I can't speak. I did like Hugo. We both liked Hugo.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
But yeah, I think he's like a film champion, and what he's done with the World Cinema Project, and well, also what he's done with Pal and Pressburger.
Yes,
really, he brought those back. Him and Thelma Spoonmaker.
Yep.
So it just with those two projects alone, he's been hugely influential in world cinema and art cinema, and bringing more things to the masses. So I was very happy about this. His film foundation has unveiled the African Film Heritage Project to locate, restore, and preserve African films in partnership with the Pan-African Federation of Filmmakers and UNESCO. So that means...
That's great.
Yeah, so we had some Ben in the collection, and we have another WCP compilation coming out. So, and I imagine that he will... give Criterion a shot at these, but I would love to see some more African films. Martin, do you know many African films that might be up for consideration?
Yeah, I think we even talked about this last time I was on the podcast about how Criterion should have more African cinema. I think probably like people who are just getting into it, Ousmane Sembene's maybe the best introduction. People are probably just seeing Black Girl, maybe for the first time with it being released. And he's got a great body of work. You know, the Xala is a really outstanding film.
Yeah, I like Xala. We both like Xala.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, very much so.
You know, so, a lot of great films. I mean, there's other, like, that, you know, even just in Senegal, there's so many fantastic films. Mm-hmm. Tuki Buki, that was already out on the last World Cinema. The follow-up film Hyenas is really fantastic, and there's a lot, and that's just one country. There's so many from all over. I have a friend who works for the film festival who specializes in African cinema, and sometimes she'll show me just these like incredible films, and they're not always in the best condition.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm glad that somebody's going to take the effort to make sure they're preserved and restored as best as they can. So I think that'd be great if more people could see them.
Yeah, and that's what he's exactly what he's going to do. So there's going to be a press conference. It didn't give the date, but it's going to be, well, you probably could be look it up, and if I could use the internet, I might look it up. But it's going to be at the Pan American Film Festival in Burkina Faso. Andrea, you might have to say this. Ouagadougou?
Yeah, that's close enough.
Is that close? Okay. So, yeah, if you're anywhere near Burkina Faso, yeah.
Can we go?
Sure, why not? Although I think our travel budget's exhausted.
Okay.
So maybe we'll go to the next festival. Okay. I don't. Do you want to go to Burkina Faso?
I do.
Okay. All right. I just saw it on The Amazing Race. It did.
Right,
maybe we didn't see the tourist areas, if there are any. But I'd love to go, you know, meet Scorsese. So
yeah, that'd be cool too.
So I think that's pretty exciting. All right. Well, I'll move on to the next topic, which is that Kevin MacDonald has a fandom page. A lot of people probably don't know Kevin MacDonald as a filmmaker. I think he might get confused with the guy from Kids in the Hall. But he directed Last King of Scotland. Mm-hmm. I know you're a big fan of that.
Oh, huge fan, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you a fan, Martin?
Yeah, I like a few of his films. I was actually at a test screening for his submarine thriller Black Sea. And my friend there, she filled out the cue card sort of as a joke, just not enough shirtless Jude Law. And then somebody else behind her said, I said the same thing.
Oh.
So I never saw the finished film, but I was curious to see if there was a shirtless Jude Law scene to see if any of those comments made a difference.
Hey, Jude, come back in for reshoots. leave your shirts in your suitcase. I did not see Black Sea, but I have seen Marley is a good documentary. In fact, I'd say that's a really good documentary.
It is. Mm-hmm.
State of Play was pretty good. Mm-hmm. But what I think this is probably is Touching the Void, which is a early aughts documentary. I forget exactly. I think maybe 2002, 2003. It's I won't go too into it because it's something that you could definitely ruin by telling too much of the plot, because it's a harrowing true story regarding mountain climbing in a really icy region. So have you seen that, Martin?
I have. It's excellent.
It is.
Yeah.
Love that.
Nobody's
movie.
Guessing the eagle.
No, probably not.
That's a fun movie.
I haven't seen it, so I can't comment. Yeah. But I really think that Touching the Void, and I saw it in the theaters, so I think that would look phenomenal in a nice 4K restoration, so I hope it's that. I can't see it being Last King of Scotland.
Maybe. I don't
know. I mean, I don't know how the rights go, but
right.
There's an Oscar winner, so sometimes those are tough to get. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Marley.
It's
probably not Marley, but you never know. What do you think, Martin?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good guess. Yeah, it's probably going to be one of the documentaries, I'd imagine. I think, like, the more dramatic films, the rights issues might be a little bit more complicated.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, and I forgot he did One Day in September. That's
a
fantastic documentary.
It is.
And
Oscar winner.
Yeah, it is. And he also did A Brief History of Errol Morris. So I don't know if that movie, that might be a supplement already, because we have The Brief History of Time.
Right.
I have to check.
I don't know.
And he did a documentary about Humphrey Jennings, who's a, I've watched all his movies.
You have.
But he's a very obscure British documentarian. Are you a fan of Humphrey Jennings, Martin?
I'm not sure. I would have to go and check. I don't know the name offhand. Sorry.
You probably don't know him. He's a British wartime, actually pre-war and post-war and during the war documentarian. He did some propaganda. There was one, London Will Take It, I think it was very good. Mm-hmm. And there are a few that are very good. A lot of them are short, and he did some features. And there's one really, really good one that's almost feature length, and it's like a docudrama. I forget the name. Anyway, I shouldn't say never, but he's probably not coming to Criterion. So anyway, I'd be thrilled with Kevin MacDonald. Any of those documentaries would be great. So I think we could use more recent documentaries in the collection.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get to some short takes. So usually we go in alphabetical order, but since we're local, I'll start with you, Martin.
Okay.
If you're ready.
Well, I'll see. Should I just jump right into it?
Yeah, yeah. Just and just so people know, this is just a recent Criterion you've watched. Yeah, go for it. Have you watched anything?
I guess probably the most recent thing I've watched is Cat People, the original 1940s version. It is 40s, right? Not 50s?
Yeah, 40s. 42, 43, I think.
Maybe. Because for a long time, I was only familiar with the remake with Nastassja Kinski by Paul Schrader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's okay.
It's okay. It's what sort of impressed me about the original is that it kind of hits all the major beats, but it's so different. It's what I really enjoyed actually was the dramatic aspect. I think the way it addressed maybe being in a relationship with somebody of a different culture and sort of the sexual anxieties, relationship anxieties that kind of stemmed from that. I was really impressed that it functioned well as an adult drama, in addition to just being a very effective horror film. And it's still very well constructed. It's of course famous for not showing any sort of cat monster, but I think that element of it, it's still strong even today. It doesn't feel like it's working too hard to not show you something. It's almost like it follows today. Even the pool scene, there's a great pool scene in Cat People where you don't see, and maybe there's something in the shadows, and it's very similar to what It Follows was doing today. So I think whether you're interested in just a well-constructed horror, or if you're interested in maybe more dramatic films, I think there's a lot to get out of it. So I give it a thumbs up or
thumbs up
endorsement. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Those Val Lewton, there's a really good feature on that disc, and it's about Val Lewton, and he's one of the few producers that are really considered auteurs. You know, there's Selznick, but I think Selznick actually got in the way of artists in a way, but yeah, Val Lewton, he did have a way of bringing humanity out through his genre films, so I'm a big fan of the ones I've seen, and actually I really like Curse of the Cat People too, which is I guess it is the sequel. So right.
Did Jacques Tourneur direct that one too, or
he not did. That one? I think he did.
Did. Okay, yeah. I know Night of the Demons, another one I know that's that one shows you the monster by the end.
It does, yes.
It's such a good movie that you can almost get past the thing is kind of goofy. But it, you know, very high class, thoughtful, well constructed films. I really admire them.
Yeah, and also they, it was called Curse of the Demon somewhere, Night of the Demon. I forget. There was naming differences in the U.S. and U.K. But yeah, that's a very good movie. That's more of a true horror, but it does have some social issues and social commentary, kind of veiled, but very apparent when you watch them more than once. Yeah, I'd love to get more Tournier, and is that how you say it?
Tourneau.
Yeah, that him. Andrea is good at correcting my pronunciation
a little bit.
And I'd love more Val Lewton. I was actually disappointed this wasn't a dual release with Curse of the Cat People. So, well, anyway, Andrea, do you have a short take?
I do, and mine will be very short, apropos because it's a short film, and it is Black Girl from Sunben, La Noire de.
Good.
And as Aaron introduced me, I'm very interested in post-colonialism, and this is a seminal film that I had never seen and I had always wanted to see. And from what Aaron tells me, the version he saw in school did not look as good as this one.
Looked a lot better.
And I actually don't know as much about French colonialism and then decolonization. And really, I think the other film that I've seen from his, was Zala. And this covered some similar ground, but there was sort of implicit criticism of the decolonization process as just sort of continuing that of the French. And I also think that there's a bit of a colonization reverse. The woman going to France, and that's sort of a narrative in a lot of post-colonial story. So, Martin, you said that you had seen this recently too. What did you think?
I think it's a tremendous film. I think it's, I'm trying to think how best to describe it because it's so unusual in certain respects. But I like that, the shift in perspective. It's so different. And there's times when you have a voiceover where it's sort of telling you things that you don't quite see, so you're wondering how much of it's subjective or not. Mm-hmm. And then you have the whole metaphor with the mask that I always found very interesting, where you know, it's something so meaningful, and then it becomes a decoration in this French home, and then it has to be taken back. And the way that child follows the French man around with this mask, you almost feel like it might turn into something. I don't want to say horror film, but you sort of feel that it represents a culmination of history. Mm-hmm. In more than just the life of the one character. Mm-hmm. But I think like the post-colonial themes dealing with colonialism and its legacy, the spiritual themes, I think those are very common in Sembene's body of work. And have you seen his last film, Mulade?
I have not.
Yeah, I did, but I saw it around the time it came out, so I don't remember. And I hadn't seen his others and didn't really know about his post-colonial angle, which... and there was a really interesting feature on him on the disc. Did you see that, Andrea?
Which one?
The Black Girl disc?
Which one?
The one about him, and it shows him in his little... his house.
The one with Ngugi wa Thiong'o?
Yeah,
that was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see pictures of him smoking a pipe, and there was a... documentary, I think maybe a year or two ago, came out about his life. I think it's not very long either. It's maybe 65 minutes or something like that. People might want to check out if they're curious about him, because I don't know how much biographical information is readily available elsewhere. But I think really interesting filmmaker, really impressive body of work. Sedo, that's another fantastic one. Amazing films. People should see them all, I think.
I think the documentary was just called Semben, if I remember right. But yeah, no, I hope that Criterion does come out with more. I think they probably have access to them. Mm-hmm. That doesn't always mean they'll come out with the movies.
I also think it's interesting that Semben was trained as a filmmaker in the USSR.
Yeah, and he was a writer first, too.
A novelist.
A novelist, right. Mm-hmm. So. Okay, well, mine is, and I'll be pretty short because we're running a little long, but that's always the case on this show. But mine is El Norte, and I decided to watch it because, well, immigration is a big topic these days. And actually, maybe 6 months from now, that movie would end with some guy just ending up at a wall and saying, okay, let's go back. But it's about a Guatemalan brother and sister that they're trying to escape the, I guess... the Civil War, was it? Mm-hmm. And they just take the typical immigration path or illegal immigration path to America. Mm-hmm. And it's good. It pairs well with Alan Brista, which is also in the collection. And but it's a little different. You see the American life. Spoiler alert, they get to America. It wouldn't be much of a movie without it, but it takes a little time for them to get there. In El Norte, I think that the American part was better done in Alan Brista, although it's very unfair to compare the two because they're both indie films. They're both well done, and I think they both have different circumstances. The circumstances are a little, I think, more realistic in Alan Brista, but I did enjoy El Norte, quote, enjoy, and it did make me think about other border movies. And I can't think of many else that are about the heading north to El Norte. However, there are a lot of border movies or cultural clash. And a friend put together a list on Criterion, and it's not about... And it was more just cultural clashes. And Lan was on there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to find that link and put it in the show notes and advise people to go look, because there was about 20 films, and they're all very culturally interesting, which I think Criterion is good at finding those films.
Yes.
And they seem, obviously with the WCP2 coming out, there'll be plenty more. But yeah, I recommend El Norte, especially now. Mm-hmm. It's kind of relevant still. Have you seen it, Martin?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what other films might be similar. I don't know. I'll read the list.
Sicario. Oh,
have you seen, there was a good Guatemalan film recently. I think it's called Ixcanol.
No.
Ixcanol. It's it's not about immigrating, but it's that's a really interesting film. There's not too many films from that region that I've seen. Chuck the Rain God's another one. I think it was shot in Guatemala by a Chilean director, but it's all Mayan language. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's more out there that I just haven't seen. I'd be curious.
Yeah, the Mayan element was very interesting in El Norte too, because there are a lot of Indian references, and mm-hmm. and they definitely had some Mayan ancestry that they were actually trying to hide, mm-hmm. but there was some mysticism that came into play. So yeah, that was interesting. Yeah, recommend it, but we got to move on.
Okay.
Sorry. Sometimes I feel like I'm just like rushing you guys through the supermarket because
no, it's good. We could stay and talk forever otherwise.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what the show is. It's yep. just talking about film, but there's a lot to talk about. So, Martin, you don't have film struck, but we have we tend to, speaking of rushing through, there's so much content on film struck, and it does have some bugs, but I hope that they do make it to Canada, because I think mm-hmm. there's enough people up there that want it, and there's a lot of content. And as you probably have just paid attention either through this show or social media, they do curate a lot of content, and they mix it up, put films in and out. In fact, we talked recently about a lot of films that are leaving Filmstruck that bothered people, but I think that they're going to be replenished. So I'm going to start by doing this thing where we've been doing the last few weeks called Speed Round. So what this is I'm going to give a topic and of just stuff that have been on Filmstruck, and I'm going to kick it to you guys, and you have, I'm going to say for the first couple, I'm going to give you 5 seconds to answer, and if you want, you can pass. So I'll start with some music. All right, history of the IRA. The Crying Game, Andrea.
Oh, love it.
Martin.
It's okay.
Ronan, Andrea.
Great chase scene, if I remember correctly. Haven't seen it in years, though.
Yeah, I don't remember the IRA part. Martin.
I think last time I saw it was on VHS, so I'm not sure I can trust my own judgment. Yeah.
All right, Odd Man Out, Andrea.
Nope, pass.
Okay, Martin.
Love it. Outstanding.
Yeah, great score. I guess I'm going over my time limit, but a good way of covering the IRA in the, I guess, 60s, 50s, 60s. Hidden Agenda. Haven't seen it. Andrea.
Pass.
Martin.
I haven't seen it either.
Okay. Andrea, Hunger.
So I first saw Michael Fassbender.
He was thin.
He was very thin, yes.
Martin, Hunger.
I saw it for free. I like it. I think that's the only Steve McQueen film I like.
Wow.
Wow, that's interesting. Michael Collins. I actually haven't seen it, so Andrea.
I saw it when it came out because I'm a big Aidan Quinn fan.
Oh, right.
Completist, so yeah. I've seen it.
Martin, Michael Collins?
I'm pretty sure it made me cry, so I only watched it once.
Okay.
But it was good. I remember it being good.
I don't know the last two, but I'm going to say, Shakes Hands with the Devil. Anybody seen it?
Yes.
I think so, but I don't remember.
And 5 Minutes of Heaven?
Yeah, I met the director, actually.
Oh, really? Oh, cool.
Yeah, that one's good. People should see that one if they can.
Okay, well, it's on Filmstruck. One thing I thought of was Sunday Bloody Sunday is mm-hmm. a great Irish IRA movie. They probably couldn't.
Bloody Sunday, you mean?
Bloody Sunday, yeah. Sunday. Sunday Bloody Sunday is mm-hmm. in the collection.
Yeah, that's to say.
Yeah, Bloody Sunday is, mm-hmm. is great. But that
Paul Greengrass.
Greengrass, right. Mm-hmm. So they probably don't have the rights to that.
Mm-hmm. When right. It Shakes the Barley?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's coming, actually.
Really?
Oh,
okay.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but it is coming.
Edit that out.
All right, there's another one. I won't do the 5 seconds, so 10 seconds. Cinematography by Nestor Almendros. So I'm just going to list the films in this selection, but of course there's plenty others from Nestor. So My Night at Maud's, Claire's Knee, Love in the Afternoon, The Marquis of O, so some Romare, Days of Heaven, The Last Metro, and Sophie's Choice. So Andrea, 10 seconds.
Days of Heaven, just iconic cinematography.
Yeah, Twilight.
Twilight, yeah. Magic Hour.
Magic Hour, right. Martin.
Trying to think. Last Metro. That a lot of French films with a lot of talking that I enjoy, but I always have a hard time if I sort of catch myself not following everything, but they all look nice, these films. Sophie's Choice, I haven't seen that in a while. I wonder how that looks. I don't think I've ever seen it in HD, so it's one of those films I just don't remember how it was shot.
Yeah, and the Romare films, are they look good, but they're, like you said, they're so talky that I don't think about... I think about more the dialogue and the acting than the cinematography, but Nestor's a good guy. I think we all went over our time, but that's okay. This is, there's really no, so okay. This one is going to be probably, silence. Mm-hmm. Charmers from China just came out today. Getting Home by Zhang Yang, The Piano in a Factory by Zhang Meng, and Mongolian Ping Pong by Hao Ning. So I'm speechless here. Andrea?
Pass.
Martin, heard of any of these?
I've seen Mongolian Ping Pong. It's sort of nice, gentle sort of movie. Maybe not super exciting. Didn't leave a huge impression, but it's very pretty, and I like anything set in Mongolia. If you like Story of the Weeping Camel, maybe you might like it.
Oh, I did like that. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we have Casa Gavras. A guy that a lot of us know. So in that collection was Z, The Confession, State of Siege, Amen, and Le Couperet. Andrea?
I need to see more of his movies.
I think he'd be up your alley.
I know he'd be up my alley.
Did you see State of Siege?
No.
Okay. And you haven't seen Z either, right?
I haven't seen Z. I saw Missing.
I think you'd like The Confession, mm-hmm. too. I haven't seen the last two. Mm-hmm. And Missing is a good one,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's why.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Martin?
Yeah, I like his films. They always sort of range between like incredibly frustrating and incredibly rewarding, but I like them quite a bit. Maybe especially The Confession and Z, of course. Z is outstanding. Yeah,
I think The Confession is my favorite of his, and I think that's a great description. Frustrating but rewarding, but also very political, very radical. I probably didn't make a lot of friends in the 70s.
Right.
Okay, well, that speed round's over. I don't know if that actually counted. So probably since you guys don't have Filmstruck, I'll probably have to do the heavy lifting on the Criterion Channel. So I'll just say that there is an episode of Observations on Film Art, number 4. And I think there might have been a mistake here. They subtitled it The Restraint of L'Aventura, which is a topic I would love and Andrea would hate.
I know.
I think, are you a fan of L'Aventura, Martin?
Barely. Well, I'm not a big Antonioni person. I guess
really?
Respectfully, keep my distance.
But no problem. A lot of people
against
share
anyone
that.
Who does. So, yeah.
The commentary on that disc is great. In fact, watching that commentary really, really enhanced my appreciation for the film. But yeah, so I think this might have been a mistake because the actual segment was Meet the Team, and this is David Bordwell and Kristen Thompson, and I forget the third guy's name. He does sound stuff, but it was more about their process up in the university. They have a film archive, and they, of course, they publish film art as a textbook, which actually was my textbook in
yes.
the earlier edition.
I remember.
I still have it. Yeah, it's a great textbook.
I still have my copy.
Yeah. I saw in the segment they had Moonrise Kingdom. I don't think that's on my textbook. and it just went through their process, which I just enjoy them as film scholars. I envy them having, you know, that's their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my part-time life.
That's okay.
Yeah, I have a good job, too. But it's neat seeing those pieces. And there's another one coming around the corner that I'm intrigued by. But they also do these things called short plus features. And they pair these usually thematically. And they had one called Shower. By Pepe San Martin, which is about a 10-minute short about a lesbian discussion, a lesbian couple talking about their, you know, just their lives, their relationship while they're in a shower. So there's nudity. It's not quite gratuitous, though. It's just matter of fact. It's there. It's a slightly older couple, I think somewhat older lady and that's together with a much older partner. And then it's paired with Blue is the Warmest Color, so the connection is lesbianism and probably the nudity. But both tastefully done. So, Andrea, do you want to describe how my reaction to Blue is the Warmest Color?
I don't really.
Well, I was watching it downstairs, and you were upstairs watching mm-hmm. something on... We have TVs upstairs and downstairs. Mm-hmm. And basically, I just said, oh, my God.
Yeah. And I'm like, what are you watching?
I know. I was like, this is not what you might think it is. I promise. This is never ending. I felt uncomfortable. Andrea walks down, gets the wrong idea.
I know.
Have you seen Blue is the Warmest Color, Martin?
I have, but I've never seen Showers. I might see if I can track that down. I wonder where I could find that.
It was okay.
It was okay?
Yeah, it was just okay. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'll put it on the back burner. It's not a priority.
I actually think that you would like Blue is the Warmest Color.
Yeah, I think
it's kind of, you know, actually, speaking of the Sunset Trilogy, it's a good tale of romance about the courtship process. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think.
And I like the director's previous film.
Right, Couscous. Yeah, I forget the American, Secrets of the Grain.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very much like very character-driven. Mm-hmm. I love that movie, but. Yeah, I think the lesbian scene was a little excessive, and I think that's probably why there was some controversy and some unpleasantness. So, yeah. Anyway, they also have a Friday double feature, which this was an interesting pairing. They had Something Wild by Demi, not the other Something Wild that came out recently, and they had Pandora's Box by Pabst. And actually, I haven't seen Pandora's Box, but I...
Oh my God.
I know. That's a big blind spot. But
is that Louise Brooks?
Yes.
And speaking of which, that's the connection is the I think Lulu is based on Louise Brooks. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the pictures, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
So do you see it, Martin?
I think so. I get that's where it comes from. Those are both sort of living life in the fast lane type movies. you got to see Pandora's Box. That's
I do have to. I don't have the disc, so maybe I do. I don't. Do I?
Oh, I don't know, Aaron.
They have hundreds, yeah.
People have been saying they were going to reissue that for so long now, but I don't know if that's ever going to show up. Hopefully when it does, it's on Blu-ray too. I have the... I don't know, maybe Kino's got it now, because I have the Diary of a Lost Girl. That's the other Pabst Brooks film. So
right, that's also
I wonder what's up with that.
That's on Masters of Cinema, so I would think that
it's got the Region out. B version, because I think that the Region A, this, I heard a lot of people saying there was something weird with the aspect ratio, so I just bought the British disc.
I kind of wonder about silent films and Criterion. They haven't been putting out too many, and I wonder if they just don't sell for them. I know they're trying to put together a good library of film, I guess they do have to sell
a
few.
It
is a business, yes.
Yeah, I think probably if it's not Chaplin or somebody like that, it's probably a hard sell for some people. Yeah,
so they also had a digital spine that's going to be available until the 31st, and that's Rosemary's Baby. So I think we've probably all seen that, right? Mm-hmm. Are you a fan, Andrea?
Long time ago. I don't really remember it all that well, actually.
Well, it's
Pharaoh, yeah.
Satanic.
Yeah, I remember.
Oh, did I just spoil it?
Yeah.
Everybody's seen it. Everybody's seen it. Martin, are you a fan?
Not like a huge personal fan, but I think it's like a big horror touchstone. It's something you see referenced a lot, borrowed a lot. I saw Get Out the other day, and see it was it's pretty great. I think it's a lot of fun, and it's quite interesting too, the satirical aspect of it. But you can see some of it's coming from Rosemary's Baby and how some of the suspense is constructed. So it's definitely got a legacy of that film.
Yeah, and so it's a digital spine. I know people have said they don't care about those, but I think they're fun to just kind of reference anyway, is just to reflect on the movie. I've watched Rosemary's Baby about 3 times. And it's one of those where there is a big twist that you don't see coming the first time, but it's not like The Sixth Sense where you basically just watch the movie twice, to see the twist and then to see everything you missed, you know. Right. But it does have that quality, but I think there's more art in it. It's Polanski, we're not getting into Polanski's personal life.
I mean, who is worth mentioning that's in that film that who I think is great is Ruth Gordon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, she is.
That's a great supporting performance. And, of course, she's in Harold and Maude. She's fantastic.
She's great, yeah. And Cannonball Run. Wasn't she in that too?
she patted me on the head when I was a little kid.
That's right, yeah.
There's an anecdote when I was in New York with my family.
So. Yeah, no, I like that. And actually, speaking of controversy, Polanski and Mia Farrow in the same movie, so I'm just going to let that one sit.
Yes, let that one go.
Okay, well, we're done. Have you enjoyed this?
Yeah.
Martin? Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I know it's a fast-paced show, but it's a... Yeah,
it's good. Keeps me awake.
Yeah. Hopefully it keeps our listeners awake.
Yeah.
So we wind down with what we've been doing. So Andrea, do you want to talk about what you've been doing?
I last week gave a conference talk about documentary film. Not necessarily Criterion related, but there are documentaries on Criterion.
Yeah.
And I love documentary and... So I just talked about the conventions of the genre and how I use the form in first-year composition classes.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk in the piece of flair about what I used.
Okay. All right. Well, then I had a question for you, but I'll wait for your flair.
Okay.
Martin, what have you been doing? I guess you already said what you've been doing, but anything else?
I guess I'm actually right in the middle of working on a short television documentary that's... bigger project, but I also have a spin-off of FlixWise that's just sort of starting up, spin-off series called FlixWise Canada.
I saw that. Yeah.
the first episode, I had a conversation about the Witch, the recent film, The Witch, and there's a few more in the works. Cool. They're already recorded, so they should be on the way before too long. You're welcome to come on if you ever
Thank
want.
Thank you, yeah. I'll accept. I don't know when. I'm going to get to what I'm doing. And I don't even think you know this, Andrea, but I'm going to be busy in March. I'm pretty much doing two podcasts a week for the whole month. Except for one weekend we're out of town, I think. But I'm going to be doing the Eclipse Viewer, and we're going to be doing our French series, and we have an Ozu episode that's already in the can, and I'll be releasing that in about a week or so. So I'm a busy man.
Do you ever get the feeling where you're like, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to be watching at 2 p.m. in 2 weeks from now? Like, your schedule becomes completely booked up.
Absolutely.
You have to watch the films planned out way in advance.
But I love it, though, because it does.
Yeah.
It is a good way to have a viewing schedule.
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to probably try to watch a Duvivier tonight just to get started. So that'll be fun. I hope the guys don't mind me announcing that. So, Duvivier is coming on the Eclipse Viewer, and we're going to tie it in with our French series. So, all right, piece of flair. And Martin, I don't know if you've heard, if you listened to made it to the end of one of our episodes, but this is just something interesting that you've found, whether it's a movie you've seen, something coming out. So, Andrea, what have you?
Well, this is related to what I've been doing. At the conference, I focused on the 30 for 30 series from ESPN, the short films, and one of the 30 for 30 long form documentaries won the best documentary.
Oh, you should show that in class.
8 hours.
Whole semester, it's fine.
And my favorite 30 for 30 short film is Judging Jewel, about Richard Jewell and the 1996 Atlanta Olympics. And there's a tie-in here because Ezra Edelman, his next project is going to be a biopic on Richard Jewell starring Jonah Hill.
Yeah, that's a sad story. I lived
it
through
is,
that.
It is, yeah.
So, and I was annoyed by the press and all, them camping on his lawn in his apartment complex. But 30 for 30 actually does pretty good work.
It does, yeah.
So, yeah, the question I was going to ask, I know you show documentaries in film or in your classrooms. Mm-hmm. Have you showed any Criterions?
Not documentaries. I mean, I showed Len and I showed Breaker Morant.
Oh, okay.
And no Criterion documentaries, not yet.
You didn't show the one about the mining? No.
Harlan County, USA.
Harlan County.
I have, no.
Okay. Have you seen that?
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Martin, what's your piece of flair?
I guess there's a film I saw recently called The Vessel, which I really, really liked, with Martin Sheen's in the cast. And what's sort of interesting about it is on the Blu-ray, there's two different versions of the film that were shot, and one's in English and one's in Spanish. And it's like completely alternate. It's not just like a different dialogue track, like they shot different takes. So it was really interesting to see how it was different. The director was talking about how if the actors ever felt like they were getting caught up, they would just switch languages and keep filming that scene just to try and keep the spontaneity up. It's really beautifully shot. I think it's a very good film. So that's my interesting thing that I've seen lately.
That's very cool. Yeah, it sounds interesting. Yeah. Well, mine is, of course, DVD releases or Blu-ray releases, and they're not from, they're Region B only, but I think this applies, Criterion people will be interested in this. Studio Canal is releasing a trio of films from Jacques Becker. Is it Becker?
Mm-hmm.
Becker. Becker, yeah, that's true. Le Trou, which that's another blind spot. I've not seen that. Touche pas à Grisby, which I have seen. That's another, that's an aging Jean Gabin movie, and then Edward and Caroline, which I have not seen, and that's easier to say.
It is.
And then also Masters of Cinema announced some films, and their output has not been as interesting lately, I think, but they're releasing Daughter of the Nile by Hu Xiaoxian, so we've been talking about Taiwanese films lately, so I don't know much about that one, but I'm interested.
That one's pretty good. Have you seen other Hu Xiaoxian films? The Assassin's the most recent one, but...
I still haven't seen that. I think I did see... Is Three Times Hu Xiaoxian?
I'm not sure. City of Sadness, Millennium Mambo, I know those are very good.
Millennium Mambo, yeah. I love Millennium Mambo.
That one's fantastic, yeah.
And I think Three Times or something like that, I did see that. That was maybe a couple years after Mambo.
I think so. That one was fairly recent, right? I think that maybe that's the one he did right before... Or I don't know, maybe it's not that recent, but he also did like a film based on Flight of the Red Balloon, right? It was around that time.
Right, and I forget the name of that one, but that was on Filmstruck too. So, Andrea, you would hate his films.
Yes, I know that.
All right, well, actually, I thought we were running long, but we're actually doing all right. we always aim to keep the show at an hour, but we have so much to cover, so... And I had my wife on the show, and we talked about our honeymoon. So
yes, that's
so
great.
How do you feel about podcasting?
I'm self-conscious of the microphone and trying not to move. And
yeah, we have a very sensitive microphone. But you did great. And maybe next time we'll get the microphone fixed and you can do it again. Andrea, where can people find you online, or do you want people to find you online?
Twitter, A_J_W.
Okay. And what do you tweet?
A lot of stuff on, just golf and, I don't know, borders and news.
She has some interesting interests.
I do.
Unique interests. I think it's cool. It's
And I try to retweet your Criterion stuff.
Oh, thanks. And you've, a couple of your friends have become listeners.
Yes, So that's someone on Twitter, actually.
That's interesting. We're not starving for listeners, but I do appreciate you doing some marketing for us. Martin?
If folks want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Movie Kessler. And I guess there I mostly tweet about movies. Sometimes Criterion films, sometimes other stuff too. So there's a lot. And if they want to hear more of me, I'm over at FlixWise.com, where I'm a co-producer on the FlixWise podcast, and I'm a pretty regular guest.
Yeah, you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're a great follow on Twitter, by the way.
Mm-hmm. And, you are.
I see these great long conversations you'll have. I see them a lot with Andy Mannion and also I think Fisher Burton lately. I think that's the
we usually have hours long conversations in tweet form. So sometimes go on thousands of words. Yeah.
I'll log in and I'll just see all this great stuff flying by, but it's really nowhere you can really jump in. I think I have jumped in a couple of your conversations. And speaking of which, I'm AWest505. I tweet a little bit less than I used to, but I try to keep on there a little bit. You can find the show at Criterion_now. We're on the Criterion Cast feed. You can listen to us either on the Criterion Now feed or at the Criterion Cast Master feed. Criterion Cast is Facebook/CriterionCast. And that's it. So thanks everybody for joining. It's been a fun show.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yay.
Yay.